Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified." Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Prahlad, O most pure, O great saintly person, your father has been purified along with 21 forefathers in your family. Because you were born in this family, the entire dynasty has been purified." Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word tri saptabi means seven multiplied by three. In one's family, one can count back four or five generations to one's great-grandfather or even one's great-grandfather's father. But since the Lord mentions 21 forefathers, this indicates that the benediction expands to other families also. Before the present family in which one has taken birth, one must have been born in other families. Thus, when a Vaishnava takes birth in a family, by the grace of the Lord, he purifies not only that family, but also the families of his previous births. Omagya Taminandasya Jananjana Salakaya Tyaksura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishnam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vanchakalpatubhyascha Kripasindubhayevacha Patitadam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar. So, very interesting subject here this morning, because if we really want to do some preaching, then we should become pure devotees. Because, as it's mentioned here, that becoming a pure devotee not only affects you as an individual, but it also affects 21 generations of one's previous family. But I was reading this, and it seems to suggest, because there was a misunderstanding on my part, that I was thinking that it was 21 generations within the present family. But Prabhupada is suggesting here that our immediate family only goes back to our great-grandfather's father, which is, as he suggests, it's four or five generations back. And to make up the 21 forefathers, then he's suggesting that that means that we have to take other lives into consideration. But I was calculating this morning that I wonder how many persons that would mean. And I came to about at least 100 persons would benefit from you becoming a pure devotee. I know that Prabhupada once said that if I can deliver one person back home, back to Godhead, then I consider my preaching to have been successful. So here we're talking about at least 100 persons going back home, back to Godhead, just because you have made, or we have made, the effort to become pure devotees. Can you hear all right, Mother Kalungana? I know that you always complain. What's that? Exactly, yes. You got it. She always complains about me speaking too quietly, so I'm going to try to make an effort this morning to speak a little loudly. Well, thank you for being present, so that gives me encouragement. You're the pure devotee here, not me. Yes. That is very correct, that the most important thing that we do in the day is chanting our 16 rounds. One cannot underestimate the importance of that. Unfortunately, many devotees do underestimate and fall short of chanting their 16 rounds. And when we actually do that, then that's the beginning of what I term gliding in Krishna consciousness. There's two ways of flying. If you watch birds in the sky, they're either flapping their wings and that way keeping up a good speed and going to the direction they want to go, or they start to glide. And gliding means basically slowing down. So sometimes we have that tendency to glide in Krishna consciousness, considering that perhaps, well, 16 rounds, well, it's not that important. But in fact, it is the most important activity that we do in the day, because it reflects on everything else that we do. Therefore, we have priorities, and that is one of our priorities. That at least we should try to chant our 16 rounds as early as possible during the day, so that everything else that we do will be done that much better and that much more easier. So needless to say, this verse is a very universal statement, because we do have in this world many political and social organizations who try to benefit people in so many different ways. The unfortunate thing of these political or social adventures is that it's all based on the bodily concept of life, and therefore that's as far as it will go. When we start talking about the soul, then we start talking more universal, because the activities of Krishna consciousness as it states here, not only affects the soul of one individual soul who's serving Krishna, but it will affect many, many other souls. In fact, in regards to chanting Hare Krishna, there is three ways in which we can chant. There is silent chanting. I think it's called mona chanting, mona, where you chant within the mind. There's your japa, which you chant for yourself, and then there's chanting for everyone else around you. So Lord Chaitanya demonstrated chanting within a forest, and he was able to attract so many living entities within the forest, so much so that they all started to dance before him. So when we're doing our japa, especially if we're in the forest, walking around where there's other living entities, chant loudly. By chanting loudly, they will also benefit. Krishna consciousness is for ourselves, but it's for everyone else too. This is the means by which we attain success in Krishna consciousness, is by helping others. There are many spiritual paths, but a lot of them are very much interested in self-liberation, self-achievements, not considering that there are other living entities around them that could also benefit. So they end up going off into forests or in the mountains and do their their spiritual practices. However, Krishna consciousness, as we were mentioning yesterday, the mood of Prahlad Maharaj was that you may go to the mountains, you may go to the forest, but I will not do that. I will remain within the cities, within the places where there is large populations of people, because I'm not interested in liberation alone. First, I wish to liberate others before I even think of becoming liberated myself. I was actually going to read something, but I lost my adapter yesterday, and my battery has just gone flat. But maybe I could just try to explain it rather than reading it. But it was something I found on the internet. It was a conversation between Yamaraj and the Yamadutas once. And Yamaraj looked at a couple of his servants and said, "You look disturbed about something. What's the problem?" And the Yamadutas said, "Yes, we have a real serious problem." And he asked, "Well, what is that problem?" And they said, "Well, there is one devotee of Krishna. Although he has left this world, he's left his body and he's left the material world, his activities are still going on full force. So much so that it is affecting the amount of persons coming to hell." So then Yamaraj said, "Well, who could that person be?" And the one Yamaduta said, "Well, it can only be one person. Srila Prabhupada. I don't know what he told his disciples and followers, but they're engaged in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in such a way that not only does it affect themselves and going back home themselves, they're affecting others around them." And he also mentions how observing Akadashi, especially Indira Akadashi. Indira Akadashi in the Bhagavad Purana suggests that if you follow that Akadashi to the T, then that will liberate all your forefathers. So he was saying, Yamaraj was saying that, well, at least we got a few people still in hell. And then the Yamaduta said, no, they're following this Ekadashi, and even those that are in hell, they're coming out of hell and going back home, back to Godhead. And then Yamaraj said, well, why don't you try to see if these devotees are misbehaving in some way. Perhaps they're not following the principles properly. And then they're destined to come to hell. And then the Yamaduta said, no. They're so clever, they know every trick in the book. No, sorry, why don't you put some obstacles in their way? That's what he said. He said, no, they take these obstacles as the mercy of Krishna. Not even obstacles for the devotees deters them from chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Because they just see, oh, it's Krishna testing me. And Krishna's testing me in this way to see how sincere I am. And I will take that challenge and show Krishna I'm very sincere to leave this world in this very lifetime. So anyway, the whole conversation goes on like that. And suddenly Yamaraj says, oh, what was that mantra that they chant? And then the group of Yamadutas who were discussing with Yamaraj, they started to sing the Hare Krishna mantra. And when they sang the Hare Krishna mantra for a few minutes, suddenly they disappeared and they themselves ascended to the spiritual world. And Yamaraj looked and thought, well, okay, maybe I should chant too. So then he sat down and he chanted the Hare Krishna mantra. Anyway, it was something I thought it was quite interesting how, you know, Prabhupada's influence is not just affecting people of this world, but it's universal. It's affecting the whole free worlds. And we can understand by that how profound and how wonderful the gift Srila Prabhupada has given us, the storehouse of treasure of devotional service, is so auspicious. Rupa Goswami explained that devotional service is like an ocean. And if you perform a little service, it's like a drop in the ocean of devotional service. In other words, devotional service is unlimited. There's no point where we can say that we've done enough service for Krishna or the spiritual master. In fact, we try eagerly to do more and more each day. And one of the tests we could measure ourselves in our own enthusiasm. At least this is one of the things that I tend to feel, that if I see a non-devotee present who's eagerly serving Maya, then if it's more eager than I'm serving Krishna, then I have a problem. If this person is so eagerly serving Maya, that much more than I'm serving Krishna, then I have a problem in my devotional service. So let me take the next step, take the next gear up, and become that much more enthusiastic. Anyway, I think I'm doing this. I'm going to stop here because it's not really so much I can further talk. Well, there is one other point I was thinking to mention, and that was that sometimes devotees, I would say, waste their time. In most cases, not in every case, but in most cases, they waste their time preaching to their parents. I was at one Namahat program, and after giving my Namahat class, one parent came up to me and said, "I'm very disturbed about something. I like your Krishna consciousness. I can see that it's got a lot of aspects which are very good. But recently, my son has been acting a little bit strangely, and I'm asking you, therefore I'm coming to you and asking for an explanation." That's what she said. So then I said, "Well, what is he doing?" He said, "Well, at night time he doesn't put the light out in his room. One night I stayed up nearly all night just to see if he was going to turn the light out, but he didn't turn the light out. And this has been going on for quite some time. And when I asked him, 'Why you don't turn the light out?' my son replied, 'Well, Mom, I've heard from the devotees that if you have a light on in your room when you sleep, then there'll be no ghosts attacking you in the middle of the night.'" And another thing he told me was that he was very insistent about this point about man landing on the moon. He said, "We did not land on the moon." So these things are disturbing me very much. So do you have anything to say in regards to this? And I said to her, "No, I don't actually have anything to say to you, but I will have something to say to your son." So I took him to the next room and practically pinned him against the wall and slapped his face. I didn't do it, but I felt like doing it. But I explained to him, this is not something that we should do, especially, or speak about, especially to our family members, and acting in a way which looks a little bit unusual. Anyway, after me explaining to him, he understood. I mean, mostly young devotees, they just need some guidance. But besides that, in general, parents and family members don't really want to be preached to by another family member. And if possible, it would be better if you can find someone else to do it for you. Does that make sense? Has anyone had an experience of overly preaching to their parents out of enthusiasm, of being enthusiastic about their own service? Yes? You want to tell your story? Yes, Krishna does say that there are two less intelligent persons in this world. One is the impersonalist, and the other is the demigod worshippers. We Westerners, we're the impersonalists, right? And we were brought up listening to songs. One that I even mentioned yesterday to the congregation here the song by Bob Dylan, "The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind." So as hippies, we used to go out on a windy day trying to find the answer blowing in the wind. It never really came. But when you think of it, after being a devotee for some years, what a ridiculous philosophy. It's not even philosophy, it's just mental speculation. The answer is blowing in the wind. There's impersonalism. Another song, "I am you and you are me and we are all together." Huh? This is impersonalism. So we have that problem in the West. We're brought up in a very impersonal atmosphere. Whereas in India, they have a problem because they're brought up in an atmosphere of worshipping the demigods. So if I was a non-devotee and you took my Bob Dylan record away from me, I would be very upset. You understand? It's the same thing. If you're still attached to Bob Dylan and your brother takes it away because he's a Hare Krishna, you wouldn't feel very happy about that. But at least you understand, yeah? No? Not a good idea. Any other stories? Yeah, what's your story?